Welcome back, everyone, to the Pursuit of Perfectness. As you know, a podcast about trying to be less hard on ourselves. I'm with my co-host, as always, Dennis Pacheco. Dennis, say hi.
Hi, I'm Dennis Pacheco. Hi, Ellen. That's Ellen Matthews. Say hi, Ellen.
Hi, everybody. And we're back for another episode.
Yeah, we're back. You're back, presumably. This can't be your first episode, can it? I guess it could. And we've got another great guest for you today. Of course, this is the podcast where we talk to people about perfectionism, their perfectionist tendencies, our perfectionist tendencies, how it can be a weight dragging us down, but how we can use it as a superpower to push us forward. Or maybe not. I don't know. We're still figuring it out. We're on this journey, and you're right there with us, listener.
So, Dennis, before we begin the episode, we have a wonderful guest waiting in our green room right now. I think we should address the elephant in the room.
Yeah, let's talk about that elephant.
Let's just talk about that elephant. It's right there, you know, staring at us.
It's huge.
It's in the room.
We're trying to ignore it, but I mean, it's an elephant.
It's an elephant. Because it's an elephant.
It doesn't belong in there.
So, what we're doing right now is actually a take two. You're kind of getting a look behind the curtain of the magic of the podcast world. We did record with the guest we have today at a previous date, and we're doing it again because I made a mistake. No, it's okay. It's okay. I'm owning it. You're getting some real time Ellen dealing with perfectionism, okay? This is the stuff. This is why we do this podcast. So we were recording the episode, and during the episode, my microphone cord slipped out ever so sneakily and stopped recording after 2.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The episode lasted maybe an hour and 15 minutes, and I only got 2.5 minutes of my audio. Now, how does a perfectionist deal with something like this?
This is a great question. This is my question.
I was very upset. I started with some negative self-talk. Mm. I started worst-case scenarioing. I thought, you and our guests were going to hate me forever. I just really just like so much blame and like a lot of like, you're dumb. You're not good with technology. Like all these things, all these like stories I'm telling myself. And then I realized like, oh, what an opportunity, right? What an opportunity this is to accept the imperfection, to accept the mistake and just move forward. And so that's what I'm trying to do. And I will say it's easier to do that when you have amazing people in your life that have positivity to them. Because if you hang around with people who are like, oh, that was a really dumb mistake, or, you know, that's going to affect you. That like gets into your being. It permeates into you. But you guys were so cool about it, and like I had to like call a bunch of people and have them like talk me down, and they were so cool about it. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is surround yourself with people that are going to reflect back positivity to you, because that really, really helps.
Yeah. And you know, be compassionate with yourself.
Yeah.
Like we talk about. And we can get into that too when we let our guests in from the green room, which today is a comfortable 74 degrees. Mm. It's a perfect, the Cuban cigars are at the perfect level of humidity in there, of course. That old Gutenberg children's Bible that we have is in there. It's,
yes.
Yeah, not a Bible. We couldn't get a Bible. We had a children's Bible, but it's a Gutenberg.
Yes. And we can actually, so we have a two-way mirror. So we can actually see the guests, but the guests can't see us.
Of course.
And those Cubans are going quick.
Yeah, our guest is a heavier smoker than I thought. But why don't we go ahead and...
She's about halfway through that children's Bible as well.
Why is she reading it? She had to break the glass. But let's, yeah, let's turn that big old metal wheel to open the door and let our guest in before she smokes herself away. Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest just graduated from NYU. Our next guest, what am I, a talk show host? It's our only guest.
You're killing it.
Oh, God. Look, we've had a couple weeks off. I'm rusty. Our guest just graduated from NYU and is pursuing her LCAT, which is a license in drama therapy. I hope I got that right. She will correct me if I'm wrong. Let's get that green room open and welcome to the podcast, Amanda Rothman.
Oh. Yay! Welcome!
Welcome, Amanda. Hi.
Oh, hi. I don't know if you could be stoned off cigars, but I am.
Oh, yeah, they were stuffed with Cuban marijuana.
Yeah, great. I feel great.
We trade our guests right. Yeah.
That's why you call it the green room.
That's why
room.
They call it the green room.
I beat you, Dennis. I beat you.
Oh!
Jinx. 420, et cetera.
Yeah, quick correction. LCAT means Licensed Creative Arts Therapist, which is an umbrella term. And I'm becoming a drama therapist, which is under that umbrella of LCAT.
Yes. I didn't know that. Thank you.
It's okay. My role in life now is to educate everyone I meet about drama therapy because no one knows what it is.
Well, let's talk about
beautiful.
It.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I started listening to the self, you know, we had a whole episode, well, half of a whole episode about the self-compassion book. A previous guest was on
yes.
to talk about it. And I just started listening to the audio book, which is great. I recommend it.
What's the self-compassion book?
Yeah, one of the things. What's the self-compassion book?
Yeah, is that just what it's called?
It's called Self-Compassion, and it's by Kristen Neff. Pick it up. It's great. The audiobook is great. And I just listened to a part that was like, well, don't beat yourself up too much for beating yourself up too much either.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-mm. So I just wanted to tell you that, Alan.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So that elephant is happy and sleepy now.
It's still there, but it's we're cool with it.
Yeah, it just wanted to be talked about, just like all of us.
Exactly. So Amanda, you had mentioned that you had multiple Thanksgivings. Did you have to explain drama therapy three times at these three separate meals?
Luckily, I've been on this road for a few years now, so I think these people have gotten the spiel. I've said that, though, that doesn't mean anything because my mom literally called me like not even 2 months ago and was like, can you just like tell me again what it is? Because someone asked.
That's amazing.
She's like, what's the elevator pitch? And so
that's
who did No, I don't think I had to explain it to again, but I think it's just because people we're too busy eating.
Got it. Well, for our listeners, if you could give that quick elevator pitch, sure. Just to ground us in the background of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So drama therapy is a form of creative arts therapy, like, you know, art therapy, music therapy, dance therapy, that operationalizes or uses the fact that we are in dramas, and I put that in air quotes, all the time. Like, we're in relationships all the time. Scenes play out in our lives all the time. We have stories, and we use those. We have characters from our stories, all those things. We use those sort of pillars, that understanding, to play out or externalize the stuff going on in our heads, the emotional material, the traumatic material, mm-hmm. Things we don't quite understand, feelings, that kind of stuff. So for example, if an art therapist helps you to externalize by drawing or sculpting or painting, then a drama therapist helps you to externalize by, say, casting that person, you know, from your life, that character from your story, as someone else in the room, in the here and now, or as an object, which this is just one method, but where you can mm-hmm. you can have that conversation in either a reparative way or a conversation you just can't have in real life because the person's passed or they can't hear it. And so that's one way. The drama therapy is aiming to, quote unquote, story your experience or create a container around it so that you can better So it's not just this like vague burden that you can't name or process, but it's something outside yourself that you can get a look at and start to understand. And once things are in containers, or, you know, another way to say this is compartmentalized, but that's a very simple version of it, because compartmentalized suggests that you then put it in a drawer and you don't look at it again. But we compartmentalize all the time, right? And so we have to be able to compartmentalize these stories or these parts of ourselves that are quote unquote, or that are overwhelming or seeping into other things that they shouldn't be in. And so by storying it, by talking about it, by externalizing it, it helps to organize, you know, what's going on.
So you're creating a narrative out of a series of events that you're trying to make sense of, or your reaction to them and other people's, like, is that what you're saying? Like,
yeah. And so it can be a series of events. It can be one event. But yeah, narrativize. There is narrative therapy, which is really just zeroes in on the storying aspect of it. Drama therapy broadens it so that you're also incorporating the body. You know, embodiment's really big with it. You know, where does it live in your body? How does it act? How does it feel? And it can also, it quote unquote, performs, right? So one way of thinking about mental illness is that it is a thing that performs. So if I have schizophrenia, then my schizophrenia performs in this certain way. Or if I have depression, my depression performs in this certain way. So it's just other ways of sort of readjusting how we look at these things through a theatrical or drama lens that makes it a little less, I don't know, like it's your whole identity, but it's really just a part of it.
Yeah. Can you give an example like of a, without revealing anybody's personal details or whatever, but like something that somebody externalized to like cope with it it better?
Yeah. I can speak from my own experience. Okay. So I got into drama therapy in undergrad. So it was offered at the school that I was offered at NYU in undergrad. And I was like, oh, I am going to therapy now and I'm here for acting as my major. I feel like those two things go really well. And I couldn't get into the undergrad class. And so I wrote a letter to the graduate program. And I was like, listen, I think I'd have a really good time in this class, but I'm an undergrad. So can I take your graduate class for undergrad credit? And they were like, sure. And so
I love that.
I took the grad class, which is just like it was the same sort of intro for non-majors kind of thing. So it's very basic and just the fundamentals. And I happened to take the class 2 months after my parents got divorced. And so I signed up for the class in the spring, right? My parents got divorced over the summer. And then the class was in the fall. And so I'm going in there like shipwrecked. You know, I was blindsided. Sure. I didn't know it was coming. I was 20 years old. I was like about to fly the nest and then the nest blew up. So I was like really sideways. And every week we did a different drama therapy intervention to explore what it was. So 1 week it was puppetry. 1 week it was masks. 1 week it was improv. You know, see, all the sort of like theatrical elements can be boiled down into a drama therapy intervention. Mm-hmm. The week we did masks, there was really no directive. It was like, make a mask and then make the opposite of that mask. And so then you wear it and then you wear the opposite. Very much simplifying this. There's like legit terms for it. But anyway, so I made the mask that I was that day, right? This is how I'm feeling. This is who I am. And then I was like, oh, the opposite. What's the opposite? I was like, I guess the opposite would be really mad. You know, I'm like livid that my parents have divorced, that I had no control, that my understanding of the world had split in two, and I was mad about it. But as someone who grew up with perfectionism. And I don't actually, I don't know if this is true across the board, probably not, but I was very removed from my anger as a kid. And so when I put the anger mask on, I fucking lost it. I was like, I was screaming. I've never screamed in public in my life. And these are people I didn't know in a graduate level, mind you. They're a full-on adults. So I was losing it. I was crying. And at the end of it, I was like, oh, this works. I could see how this works.
So what triggered it? Like, did you see a reflection of like yourself in a mirror? And like, oh,
look I at wish that. I could it's tell you the science mask. Of it. And it's not that but, woo-woo. We did see our reflections. We did have mirrors.
Okay.
But... it was actually, so drama therapy plays with distance. So if, for example, the three of us are writing a story together on a whiteboard, that's pretty far away from us physically. And, you know, if the story is a metaphor, it's also far away from us psychologically. But if then we're writing story that the three of us been through, like the three of us got into a car accident, we're writing the story about that. That's psychologically closer, but still physically distant. The mask was psychologically and physically close. And so that distance being so up close, it affects how you emote, right? If it's really far away, you're not going to have a lot of emotion. It's going to be more cognitive. If it's super close, you're going to have a flooding of emotion. It's going to be a lot less cognitive. That's the science.
Wow. This is fascinating. It also reminds me of... feeling your feelings as opposed to thinking your feelings.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know,
that's great.
Writing it out seems very cerebral as opposed to like wearing a physical manifestation of an emotion. Wow.
Yeah. Plus, I think, I don't know. You studied it and I just learned about it 4 seconds ago, but.
Give us your opinion.
Here's my opinion. Yeah, and I think probably like you look in the mirror and you don't see yourself, like you're gone. You just see an angry person. So like now you have permission to be this angry person.
Right. And permission's a big part of it. You know, you have to be in a space where people are like, what's the mask saying? I'm not interested in what you're saying. What's the mask saying? You know, I'm here for the mask. I'll support you. I'm a teacher. These are all people who are also in masks who are about to do the same thing. You know, all that permission is and, you know, holding is necessary for that.
Just like on a physical textural level, how'd you make the masks? What were they made of? Just curious. Were they paper? Like just you drew them face.
Isn't that funny? I have like a clear picture of what they look like, and yet I have no idea. To me, they're paper mache.
Yeah, and in my head, they're paper mache masks that look like the masks in like that Twilight Zone episode where they wear masks.
The pigs.
No. There's an episode. Where they're masks that they put on, and it's like to get my inheritance, all you vultures have to wear these masks that externalize your inner sloth or greed, and and they're like they're these the big thing with those masks is
distortion
and when something's not the left side doesn't match the right side,
not symmetrical,
asymmetrical,
yeah. Yeah, so, yeah.
Anyways, what were the masks made of?
Yeah, just real quick, I just want to say, if you're making an ugly, if you want a face to be ugly, make it asymmetrical. We've responded to that. Okay, what were the masks made of?
Material is a huge question, and it's a big consideration. Really? Because different materials evoke different emotions, right? If I hand you a box of crayons and paper plates, so you're going to be like, all right, I feel this kind of way. But if I give you a full paper mache set, and it's like, now we're going to take 4 hours to let this dry properly and like get into it, there's a different investment, right? There's a different feeling of
You're right.
That being said, I don't remember.
That's so great.
Oh, that's the perfect answer.
But that's a really good point. Yeah. You're right about the... so that would certainly evoke.
I think we had a bunch of different materials to choose from.
That makes sense.
And probably some.
And then
like bones of another mask and put on it and paper plates. I think there was like a bunch of things to choose from, but all I remember is the feeling.
Wow.
So I'm curious how do you or drama therapists acquire clients? Because I know so many people, including myself, that do talk therapy, and it doesn't seem to be like an accessible thing that you would like sign up for. Is it more like a program through a school or through other organizations?
I just want the crowd to know that you did not pimp me into this question, that this is something you're actually asking, but this is how you can hire a drama therapist. It's hard because drama therapy specifically has a bad name. It sounds like you're going through all your drama.
The branding.
Yeah, it's got a marketing problem. And so people know what an art therapist is.
Who wants to go through drama? I want therapy because I don't want drama.
Yeah, or right. Who wants to have a therapist who's dramatic? You know, like all these sort of like tones of it are there. Or do I have to be a good actor? Or is it for those kind of people who are like outspoken kind of thing? That kind of thing.
And it helps if you have some Meisner, right? As a
client. That's what I put on my card.
yeah.
So it's people just don't know. They don't know. So like art therapy makes a lot of sense. It's also been around a lot longer. Music therapy makes a lot of sense. People feel good when they listen to the music that they want to listen to. So drama therapy exists in systems a lot of the time, in schools and hospitals, because they were looking for an LCAT. And that's where a drama therapist can come in and sort of educate what a drama therapist does. And then from there. So I interned at a Kings County hospital and for a low fee clinic in Manhattan. And it was both because the supervisors either were drama therapists or knew that drama therapy was a useful thing. People also don't know that, you know, if you go to therapy, then you probably have someone who does a version of psychodynamic therapy. This is like their clinical orientation, right? Psychodynamic therapy or CBT, DBT, these kinds of things that are like people really know, right? Drama therapy puts those things into action. So we can be in a dialectical behavioral therapy, which is DBT. You're dealing with contradictions, right? This thing is true and its opposite is also true. Well, in drama therapy, you can just externalize that. So that's a way to sort of sell the fact that drama therapy can really be used anywhere. That being said, a lot of private practice exists. Drama therapists do go into private practice alongside their system job or their day job. But it is New York probably has the highest concentration of them too. But it's still a growing field. It's probably been around 30, 40 years, I think.
Interesting.
So, can anybody, is that recommended for anybody going through drama therapy or is it better for specific types of problems that you're having or situations?
Right.
Drama therapy is like water. It should mold to the cup it's in. And so if the therapist can't do that, then I think it's on them. But I don't think there is a specific person or type of person that would benefit more or less from drama therapy. It's meant to be as adaptive as we are, like people who are in relationships. Yeah. That's good for, you'd be a good candidate for drama therapy.
Ah, okay. Or want to be.
I assume the answer to this is yes, because water can mold to it. But have you ever done like couples therapy, drama therapy?
I haven't. It is done though. It's very exciting.
Yeah. That seems like actually a really good use of drama therapy, because I feel like that's, like you said, it's so actionable and you can speak things out with your partner. I don't know. I feel like that would be like such a good use for it.
Sounds a little scary to me. I mean, I'm in couples therapy with my partner because we just want to get everything right. And we're doing great, everybody. Don't worry. but the idea of like, yeah, I don't know. The idea of like, all right, we're both going to become these characters and be like more raw versions of ourselves, maybe, is that's what I think. And that makes me a little trepidatious, I guess.
Yeah, that sounds terrible. I would not recommend that.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
There's a big difference between individual therapy and couples therapy. I wouldn't do the same thing with folks, individuals, as you would do in couples. I don't think we should be our most raw and unfiltered selves all the time with our partners.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not helpful.
That's a good point.
Right.
And I don't think a couples any good couples therapist would say, would agree with that or disagree with that. But
that's a really good point.
The other thing is drama therapy drama therapy interventions are used after rapport is built and when there is a target thing to do, right? So in between, there is talking, there is getting to know, there is setting goals or just sort of talking out what you're feeling or thinking. That's all a big part of it too, because you can't really jump into an activity or an action or an intervention without a clear idea of where it's going. At least a therapist should have one.
Yeah. So Dennis, if you ever do want to do a drama the couples therapy, I'm sure that they would like build, you know, again, it's the water. It would mold to you.
Yeah.
I also want to say, because I feel like people, Dennis, you just said this too. You're like, we're in couples therapy. We're doing fine. Let it be known. Therapy is not for like, it doesn't mean something's wrong. Like I'm in therapy. Like I feel like it gets this negative connotation of like something's wrong and it needs to be fixed. Mm-hmm. That's not like therapy is like a, I think, like a positive, proactive thing to do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like I wish that was understood more in our culture, that it's like, it's a very healthy, proactive thing to do. And I think everyone should do it.
I will say this, one that made me laugh because it made me think of this. One couples therapist that my partner and I had was like, she was just getting to know us. And she was like, basically, she was like, well, you don't seem to have any problems, it doesn't sound like.
Oh, God.
So why are you here?
Oh, my God. So even therapists are like, therapy is for when something's wrong with you.
They are people.
Specific one. They're people. Yeah. They're people.
That's so true. I honestly forget that. Mm-hmm. Like, I really do. I really do. I like, I give them like way too much authority. I give them, and I've talked about this with my therapist.
Me too.
She's even been like, I'm a human. I'm not like a total authority on this. Like you have to take everybody's advice with a grain of salt.
I'm so guilty.
You defer too much to your,
I was just about to say, I think what you're saying to say, Dennis, I am so guilty of deferring too much to my therapist, of trying to be the quote unquote perfect client. I get notes on it all the time.
Yeah. Well,
I think about how I go to therapy where I'm like, I'm like about to strap in for therapy and, you know, because it's all virtual or whatever.
Strap in!
It's all virtual. So, you know, I got to put in the microphone, set up the microphone, the headphones and the camera and everything. And
got to buckle the fuck up.
Go to the link, test your connection, test your video. Do all this. But when I'm like, you know, getting all set up, I'm like, what do I want to talk about today? Because I don't prepare. Like I like to be spontaneous in pretty much everything, which is
interesting.
Good for some things and bad for some things. But I feel like whatever comes out is what's on my mind. And and even if I don't know why I'm talking about it, there must be a reason. So I'm just going to see what happens in this therapy session. You know, and that usually works out pretty well for me.
Absolutely. I prepare because that like I'm very like I tend to be type A. And so like 30 minutes before therapy, I take out my journal and I start writing and I start like outlining the things I want to talk about. I like treat it like a school assignment. But what's interesting is sometimes like I'll have like 3 points and I'll just get to like the first sentence and my therapist will like explore it and I'll like end up somewhere I never expected to be. So like all my planning goes out the window. Amanda, how do you prepare for your therapy sessions?
Okay, well, as a therapist, I should absolutely prepare. And as a client,
you don't just wing it. You don't just,
I mean, there are bad days, but As a client, I definitely did do a lot of journaling before therapy. And then I told myself about that. And my therapist was like, you know, be like Dennis. And so
she said my name.
Yeah,
right?
she knows you. And so
Beth, I love Beth.
Yeah, oh my God. What if her name was Beth? I would throw my computer. I feel like talking about my personal therapy journey is probably really fucking boring. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like it's talking about your dreams. But in general, I came in with like notes and was like, you need to fix this today. And then I've evolved to like, what feeling am I trying to avoid by planning? And we've gotten to more like the typical New Yorker cartoon where I'm lying down, she's sitting behind me.
She's a praying mantis.
Yeah, she's about to eat me. She's not a psychoanalysis, but that's like the position we take on the field. It's about like going into, you know, how do you feel it, where does that feeling come from, be less avoidant of it or scared of it, or like take away the stigma of it, that kind of work. And then I saw her in real life for the first time 2 weeks ago, and we had been just on the phone for all of lockdown, and so I hadn't seen her face in 2 years, and it had aged just like a micro amount, but like enough where I was like,
interesting.
I was like bawling. I was like, you're gonna die.
Oh wow.
It was just like a really profound experience to see the person I haven't used to see it weekly, to having talked to her that whole time, but then just see her face differently. And I was like, I'm not lying down anymore. I want to like eat up looking at your face. So that has,
you literally were lying down then.
What?
You were literally lying down.
No, when I first came in, that happened. So I was like, I'm not lying down for a while. Right. Like we are going to be sitting on the couch looking at each other doing therapy for the foreseeable future until I decide to change that. Yeah. But also becoming a bossy client has taken time. That is not how I normally work.
Interesting. Interesting. Oh my God, I have so many questions. Because I totally feel like I can't be bossy. But as a therapist, sounds like you'd welcome bossy clients.
Oh my God, maybe I should be bossier. Love it. Oh, it's so good. Think about it this way. It's energy. I can't do anything with no energy. Yeah, I have to get something in order to do it. So if you come in and be like, I hate this, and no, I'm like, okay, that's great. Tell me why no. Tell me what would be a yes, right? Like, we can work with that. Tell me why you hate me. Like, I love all that. I used to do inpatient work with adolescents. So these are 16-year-olds who are against their will in a hospital, sometimes over their birthday, over Christmas. Like, these kids are pissed, right? And then they come in and they're like, this shit is whacked, you're whacked, and I don't want to be here. And I'm like, excellent. Where would you want to be? What's it like there? Tell me more. But if the worst and the most heartbreaking thing, and Ellen, this isn't what I think you're saying, but this is what came up for me, is like when they sit there and it's nothing, right? It's just a blank, shut down stare. That is so hard, right? That's like a deep, that's like when someone's deep down in the hole, right? It's hard to be in there, and that's the you can do that, but it's just harder. If someone comes in and is bossy, I can do that all day.
See, I have a hard time if my therapist says something that I disagree with. I have a hard time saying I disagree with you. I'll be like, okay, all right.
Me too. Me too. I'm the same way. Like that happens all the time. My therapist will say something, and I'll be like, I don't agree, but then I'll just be like, yeah.
Me too, because I'm like, well, she's, you know, the authority. Who am I to say she's wrong, you know? I don't know. I have assertiveness issues, I guess.
I once told a therapist, like, this thing you said last week, I don't think you should have said that. It made me feel bad in this way, and I think you're wrong because of this reason. And, like, wow. I kind of, like, let him have it a little bit. And I wasn't mean or anything. I just was like, this is what I, this is why I think you were wrong when you said this. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, cool. He was like totally open to it and everything. Very open to it. But then I got in my head about like, I shouldn't have said that. I hurt his feelings. Like that was across the line. And then I just kind of faded away from that therapist. But,
it's hard.
I think I'm a lot better now being assertive. Anyway,
that's delicious. I know that's not the point of this podcast, but this is not how to recover from therapy. But I am deeply interested in all that. But I'll let you were going to say something else.
I need help. I would like your perspective on this because the first like 2 minutes, and I used to do in-person face-to-face therapy, and then I switched to phone, and I really like the phone. It's so easy, and like I think I can hide a little bit more because I don't have to make eye contact with someone, so it's probably me like being a little fearful. But anyway, the first like 2 minutes of therapy are like the most awkward like part of the session, and I never know how to start. Because
I agree.
They always kind of like let me lead. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of show up being like, well, I need to start this. And I also want to be polite. So I'm like, hi, how are you? And you know, they'll say good. And then I'll be like, should I ask her more questions about herself? I mean, you know what I mean? I'm like, how much should I ask her? You know what I mean? And then I'm like, you know, we only have 40 minutes. Like, I need to, it's, you know, it's a one-sided relationship. So, like, it shouldn't be, I feel like how are you is enough. But, like, should I ask about, like, her weekend or her family? Like, I just never know. I never know. And I feel like I'm being rude because it starts to feel like you're calling up a friend and only talking about yourself.
Yeah.
Anyways, how do you start? How do you start? What kind of niceties should you do?
Okay.
Because I think. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead, Dennis. I'll respond after.
No, I was just gonna say because I'm the same. Like I'm like, hi, how are you doing? And she's like, fine. How are you? How's your weekend? And I'm always like, we're just gonna dive right into this. Like, warm me up first, you know. Foreplay.
Well, because when I ask her how are you, it's a politeness. When she asks me how are you, I'm like, well, here we go. You know, like now we're in the thing. How am I? Well, I have 3 bullet points, you know?
Yeah.
Anyways, Amanda, your thoughts.
I just love this so much.
Are we doing therapy bad?
Are we doing therapy bad? We're like the most neurotic like people ever.
No, you're delightful and adorable children. No.
Sweet summer child.
Do you guys know Esther Perel?
Uh-uh.
Brilliant therapist.
No, but that name sounds familiar.
She has a podcast called Where Should We Begin? And it's all about therapy. Oh. And that's the main question. Where should we begin? Because it is the center square on a bingo therapy board, right? Like that is the golden question.
What a great podcast name.
She's a genius. Yeah.
Second best name of a podcast I've ever heard.
She's a genius. I highly recommend her. She makes me inspired to be a therapist, among other people.
That's lovely.
My response to the polite hellos is twofold. One, you don't need them. You can sit there in silence and talk when you're ready. Because that time is yours. You paid for it. And the therapist is there to do therapy, not to talk about themselves. They are doing a job. And it is a one-sided relationship. And you can talk about how that's uncomfortable. So the second part of this is just say that. Just say, this is uncomfortable. Just say, you are polite and then I have to be vulnerable and I don't feel warmed up to it. Or I would like you to buy me dinner first, or like a joke, right? Like something that you can, but you can just say what you're thinking, because doing anything other than that is taking care of the therapist. And they're fine. They're fine. Mm-hmm. That's about you. about your need to take care. And so like you can take care of that person. And once you know they're okay, then you can be not okay. But like that, that managing of other, someone else is a beautiful thing to talk about in therapy.
I didn't know that we were going to get into like our own fear of being a perfect therapy patient. But I'm glad we got there.
I'm loving it. Me too. Me too. And might I just point out that we wouldn't have gotten here unless I had made a mistake.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, Boom. Look at that. Look at the beauty of the imperfect.
Yeah. Suck it. Listener, in your face.
I don't know why we're being aggressive toward the listeners.
I don't know.
They have not done anything wrong.
Look, we all have to go into the green room for a minute and take a puff of a couple of Magic Cuban cigars.
So yeah, mine's
should we take a quick break?
Should we take
a quick break?
Yeah, let's take a quick break. And we're back. All right.
And we're back. Wonderful.
That was a good smoke break.
Great smoke break. Amanda, you had a question for us.
I do. I have a question about
green room.
Yeah, yes. I it came to me in the green room, and so I'm bringing it here into the white room.
Wonderful.
Oh yeah, for the listener, we never mentioned this, but we record in a completely blank white room. We're all wearing white robes.
It's like a void.
Yeah, it's really disoriented.
Just how we...
Our chairs are shaped like eggs. It's very.
I actually just watched The Matrix for the first time. And
oh my god!
For the
oh
first
my god.
Time,
me too, yeah. Amanda. Me
Wait,
too.
Really?
For the first time,
literally, I watched it for the first time last week. That is so
weird. On Friday.
Are we in the Matrix? Oh my god!
Well,
I watched it for the first time last week.
That's
I'm not even kidding.
Wow, I wonder if we watched on the same day.
I'm freaking out.
That is wild.
What'd you think?
The first 30 minutes are a real bummer. There's like body horror and really sad and like really I feel bad for Keanu. He was really selling it. And then he was really good. And then the rest of the movie is a fucking romp. It was a real fun time.
It's a ride.
Yeah, right? I love the whole
time.
Like the revolution sort of how it lives in that metaphor really well. I thought it was like it still felt relevant.
Mm. It does. It's absolutely still relevant, and the special effects hold up.
Yeah, awesome.
I mean,
that Scorpion
came out in 1999, and I'm like, this looks amazing.
Yes,
Bullet Time is gorgeous and kicks the shit out of any CGI person.
What's Bullet Time?
Okay.
I know we're getting wildly off topic, but I just have to say this. I do not like CGI. I do not think it looks right, and I don't understand why we use it. I am a fan of puppets. Jurassic Park, those puppet dinosaurs. I'm a fan of the puppet Yoda in Star Wars. I do not like CGI. I don't think it looks right. Mm-hmm. I think we should go back to puppets and whatever they did in The Matrix, which I'm not sure what they did.
So yeah, Amanda, you didn't know what Bullet Time was. It's like if you look at behind the scenes Matrix stuff, and I'm sorry, listener, we are getting a little off track. Okay. You probably
yes,
like the Matrix.
We need
Everybody
to talk
the
about that.
Spoiler.
They would like, for example, when the agent on the roof like shoots at Keanu and he like dodges and the camera like swings around him as he like falls backward, dodging the bullet in slow motion.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course, iconic.
So the way they did that
the
is...
The most famous scene.
Yeah. The way they did that
do you remember
is...
Remember that?
The way they did
do
that is...
That?
Do you remember the most famous scene? And, like, Trinity, like, jumps up in the beginning and, like...
Yeah.
And, like, does that kick. I'm doing a little kick.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Suspending myself from the ceiling and doing a kick for the listener.
Dennis, you're great at it.
Yeah, I am. But what they did was they would put him in a... They would put the actor in a green room, like, a green room... and they put like a series of cameras along the wall, like you know, whatever, 100 cameras, like in that arc around where the, and then they'd all film, and then they would stitch that together. So
in
that
Bullet
it would,
Time,
see that's beautiful.
Yeah, and then in part two,
that
they just did
beautiful.
CGI, and it looked like dog shit.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like.
Well,
dog
I didn't
shit.
Watch two and three. I was told I didn't need to, and I can just read the
Don't
Wikipedia.
Yeah,
because
really?
4 is coming out, which was all. This was all unrelated
exactly.
to each other. I didn't know that was happening.
There is like a cool like action sequence in part two, but That's it. Like on top, like in the, on the freeway on a moving truck and stuff.
I've seen the clips of that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're good.
Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, so we're in the white room.
Yeah. Where do we start?
We're in the training center. Morpheus is here.
Yes.
It's wild that you both saw it for the first time recently. That is great.
Isn't that so funny?
Yeah. That is very funny.
That is.
I've seen it a million times.
I don't know what that is.
I'll say one. Can I just say one personally? One last thing about the you said the first part was like a bummer. Totally true. I watched The Matrix probably 1,000 times in the early aughts, but only from the point when he walks in with the long trench coat to the security gate metal detector.
Yeah.
Only from that point to the end, I would watch from there to the end
when he believes he's the one.
Yeah, what to the end when he believes he's the one? Because from there on, it's just like nonstop. It's a freight train.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Amanda, your question.
The title of your podcast, The Pursuit of Perfectness. I am curious about it being the pursuit of accepting imperfectness or the pursuit of making perfect silly by calling it perfectness, or the pursuit of actually trying to be a perfect thing that is also silly, that is contradictions. I don't know. I'm curious about the title.
So astute.
So
astute.
Obstute.
Obstute.
The answer is yes, all of these things.
Awesome. All of these things.
Cool. Yeah. We
all
we,
of these things.
We did talk about it a little. It's a lot. yeah. The pursuit, like for me, because I pushed for it more than I had to kind of convince you, Alan, because is that fair to say? Or
I remember saying perfectness, that word bothers me.
Yeah.
And you were like, well, that's why we got to keep it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's like, yeah.
It's like that word isn't perfect. Like you want to say perfection, but it's perfectness, which is like, that. It's a little nod to like, you know, there's a little bit of imperfectness in the title.
Yeah. It's a little bit like, yeah, you're walking and then there's like a hitch in your step where like you thought there was going to be one more step when you're walking downstairs and there's not.
Right.
Or
it's also a play on pursuit of happiness.
Yeah.
But I guess to answer your question, it's like, I don't think we are trying to pursue perfection. I think we are getting outside of our bodies and looking at us, at ourselves, and being like, why are you pursuing perfection? What?
It's a study on the pursuit of perfection.
Pursuit.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's kind of like a tongue in cheek thing. Like we're trying to be perfect, but it's obviously like we're silly heads. We're comedians and we're silly heads. So it's got to be a little silly.
Great.
It's a lot. It's a loose concept.
It's like water.
Yeah.
It's this metaphor. I just invented. It's water. It fits into.
I think I need to credit container. Bruce Lee. I don't think I did that before.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce.
Props to Bruce Lee.
Oh, got it.
You want to talk about action?
We can't get derailed. Dennis, we can't get derailed.
The pursuit of action movies.
Yes.
Oh, but.
I mean, we did say this podcast might evolve, but that's going to be too much.
Into a movie criticism podcast? I just think we should talk about action movies specifically and to the exclusion of anything else. Watch Shang-Chi, everybody. That's my pick of the week. Dennis's pick of the week. This is a new feature of the podcast.
Of the week? Came out last month.
It's a weekly podcast.
All right.
Oh, my God. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
But I think
it's also about like we're just looking at ourselves and kind of seeing how this theme continues to show up, like therapy, right? We can't just like, I think the show could also be like, can we just relax? Like that could be the title, because it's like, can we just like be a therapy patient? And it's like, nope. I'm gonna, I gotta overthink everything. I was too assertive. You know, I gotta prep. I gotta write this journal entry. I gotta have my summery, ready to go. So it's kind of just like, God, why don't I have any chill?
And the answer
and
is shame.
And how do I get more chill? I mean, yeah, probably.
Shame? Right? Is that what you said? Shame?
Shame, yeah.
Mm.
Shame. Tell me more.
Shame keeps us from just being. We then have to manage. We then have to plan. We then have to like work around and mitigate and all this shit because shame is such a fucking horrible feeling and nobody wants to deal with you in it because that's stigmatized, right? You don't want to be too close to someone's shame because then what if it gets on you? So, which is kind of a theoretical thing to say. I'm trying to think of a better in practice example. But the point is that we learn shame at a really young age. And I think perfectionism is a response to shaming. Mm-hmm. And then we try to get things perfect to avoid being shamed again.
Right. Right.
And it's that avoidance of shame because we don't know how to deal with shame or hold shame. And Brené Brown talks all about this.
I was thinking of Brené Brown. Yeah.
That we have a real... Like, if I were to just say, Ellen, can I use you as an example?
Absolutely.
When the cord came unplugged with the mic, right? So,
oh my God.
I could put myself in your position there. I would totally feel shame. I was the reason this thing didn't da 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 da, right? Yes. But that's another way of looking at that is, you know, it happened and I had no idea. So, how could I really be at fault? Right, it was something I truly didn't know, and no one else caught it. So as a team, we didn't catch it, right? And now that shame can, you know, how does that shame live if you're sort of like, if you don't make it all about you? So shame and self-centeredness sort of go hand in hand too, because it's a way of being like, well, it was all my fault, and it's all about my mistake, and I'm going to keep bringing. Like, I'm going to keep self-flagellating because I can control me, right? And so it's another way of being self-centered. Not that I'm calling you self-centered, but it's a...
No, you're absolutely right. It's an arrogance. How could I have done this?
Right.
You know, like...
And then,
what is... I'm a human being, too. Like, why do I think I'm like...
Oh, my God. You know? I have had this talk with myself many times that people make mistakes and I am people.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Exactly. That's like a mantra that I've started using a lot that has come in that is really helpful I feel like I've just discovered it of saying like, well, mistakes happen. I'm only human.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it helps so much. Just like I make a mistake and I say, well, mistakes happen. I'm only human. And that just saying those words to myself just makes everything much easier to deal with.
Yeah, and shame grows in secrets and in your head, right? And in neuroses. And so going back to the conversation before the break about, you know, taking care of your therapist by saying, well, I'm thinking all these things, but like, should I ask about your weekend? It's like that's like I have shame about the kind of client I'm being right now and shame about wanting to ask for more. And not wanting to have to be polite, right? I should feel ashamed for not wanting to be polite. This is what the push-pull is happening in my mind, right? But if I were to just say all that out loud, you really wouldn't go through that dance anymore. You would just say, this is the dance I'm going through in my head right now. And the therapist would respond. And then there would be no more shame around it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like... I think... I almost forget that I have permission to speak freely in therapy because sometimes I feel that same awkwardness just like if I'm in a work meeting with someone and like if I'm in a work meeting, I wouldn't necessarily be like, oh, these first 2 minutes of a one-on-one are always awkward. I don't know what to say. You know what I mean? Like you kind of do have to like, I don't want to say bullshit, but like small talk.
Yeah, you have to perform.
You have to perform. But like, I don't, but again, it's like, this is a different context. This is a different relationship. I don't have to do that dance. Also in a work meeting, it is a two-way relationship. Like it's a different agenda.
Yeah.
And so I think I need to be more conscious of like, where I am and who I'm speaking to and what's the reason for this. And that can change the way that I behave.
Right. Well, and you don't have to. Oh, go ahead. I was just going to say.
I love it.
I'm going to talk, Dennis. I was just going to say you don't have to solve it. You don't have to say, oh, I'm in this place and now I can talk this way. You just have to say that. You just have to say, I forget where I am sometimes, right? Like, you don't have to remind yourself where you are. You can just say, I forgot. Like, the therapist is there to work with you.
And I forget that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Good. And I don't have to solve it.
Right. No. Oh, my God. No. That's why you're paying them.
Yeah. I was just so going to say, like, my comment that is not important. Really. It's whatever.
It is important.
It's fine.
You're important.
Speak. I'm important. It's fine. I was just going to say that relationship you have with your therapist is a relationship that you don't have with in any other part of your life with anyone else.
Right.
So
right.
It's okay that it feels weird because it is unique and strange.
Yes. Yes. Right? So true.
And it's so a muscle. True. It's a
muscle. Yes, it is. It's a muscle. And the more you work it out, the easier it is to lift.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Not necessarily, but hopefully. I would say it's a privilege if that is how it works. And it's not linear. You know, sometimes it can be easy and sometimes it can be hard. So it's a wonky muscle.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I guess for me, like, I think therapy was really hard when I first started because I was kind of like, I don't know what like to talk about, and it's hard to talk about these personal things. And now that I've done it for so long, I like kind of go in and I'm like, all right, here's what I know the things I want to like talk about and work through. So for me, it feels like through practice, I've gotten like better at it. But you know, I can totally see how other people could ebb and flow. Yes. I feel like we could talk for 10,000 more hours, but I think we may be out of time. So, Amanda, we want to thank you again for joining us for a second time, even though the listeners will only have you for one of those times.
And if we have the privilege of talking to you again in our next season 2, I would love to have you back. I don't want to put you on the spot. Don't say anything.
I almost unplugged myself just so we'd have an excuse to get it back.
I wouldn't blame you. I wouldn't blame you.
Oops, I didn't get any of that. As I stare at 3 recording red lights that I've been looking at the entire time. We're good.
We're good. We're good. Yeah, thank you so much, Amanda. For being here, and there are so many other things that we're gonna talk about with you in the future that we didn't get to, but we will next time. Listener, hope you enjoyed that. I know we sure did.
We sure did.
Amanda, do you have anything that you want to tell people about?
No, I guess one thing I'll leave folks with is please be imperfect with your therapists. It gives them something to do.
Mm.
Ooh, love that. Nom, 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 nom. That is chef's kiss good. And if you're looking to hire a therapist.
Oh yeah, I'm on Psychology Today.
Amanda Rothman. She's on Psychology
Today.
Fantastic. Amanda Rothman, drama therapist, licensed creative arts therapist.
Close. I have my permit, my limited permit. I'm working towards my license.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. That's amazing. Good luck.
Thank you.
Keep us updated on that.
Gotta stay legal.
Okay. So on Instagram, we are at Pursuit of Perfectness, and we're the Pursuit of Perfectness on Facebook. You can write us an email at pursuitofperfectness@gmail.com. If you like what you heard, rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, tell your friends. Thanks to Keith Burgun for our theme music. Thanks to good old Dennis Pacheco for our art. I did it, guys. I made the art.
Yes.
You know what? Let's just say it. As we're recording this, we've had our first episode finally air.
Yes, very exciting. Drop,
which was very, very
Congrats.
Exciting. And just fills my heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Fills my heart with so much gratefulness and pride. And I just want to say Thank you, Ellen, for being my partner in this endeavor from day zero.
Likewise, Dennis. This has been a joy, and can't wait to see how this continues to evolve.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Kung Fu review, movie review podcast.
And I'll be here to rein us in.
Well, until our next Kung Fu movie review, folks, be a little less hard on yourself. Bye.
Bye.